Back together again, you and I wrapping up a busy week, Friday style, October 10th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I took a look at the state of the governor's race and wondered how prospective voters are feeling about 1 year from Election Day. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso dropped by with his weekly update, including his thoughts on recent revelations about alleged sham marriages taking place in Bridgeport. We also welcome Dr. Nicholas Wright, the author of Warhead, How the Brain Shapes War and War Shapes the Brain. So how about we start off a Friday here? We'll play it a little looser or loosely or looser than ever because, you know, we've been talking for the past 4 days or so about the stuff that, you know, maybe driving us a little crazy, whatever. So let's stay on that ilk, but let's do it a little different, shall we? You know, let's do it a little different, all right? Let's jump in our time machine, shall we? And instead of it being October the 10th, 2025, let's play a little game, shall we? Let's jump in our time machine here. Let's set the flux capacitor in our DeLorean for, let's say, the early part of November of next year. Shall we do that? The year 2026, which, again, is an election year, but not like the election year we're having this year. What you see out there now on, on many street corners, many lawns, those are signs for municipal elections, right? A mayor in some towns, first selectman, first selectwoman in some towns, city councils, representative town meetings. The odd years are the municipal election years in many areas. So let's play a little game. Let's go forward in time, and we've just descended to, let's say, late October, early November, about a year from now. And you're contemplating all the stuff that's going on. Now, factor out the national elections. I know it's going to be hard to do as we get closer, but factor out the House and the Senate and the people screaming at each other and pointing fingers because of that. So let's factor all that out and let's take a look at what's going on here in Connecticut. Now, all indications are likely he still hasn't said yes, but no matter where you read, no matter what pundit you read, it certainly seems like Governor Ned Lamont is going to run for a third term. Some people say that's wise. Some people say it's not wise. And some people say, hey, that never works out. But listen, you know, the guy has got more money than he'll ever need. He's independently wealthy, comes from a wealthy family. And maybe this gets him out of his wife's hair. Honey, go run the state. I'm busy today. Just kidding, Governor. Or Annie or anybody in the first family there in Connecticut. Just kidding. However, let's assume he's running. And let's assume that at least at this point, it is either Greenwich Republican State Senate member Ryan Fazio or perhaps the soon-to-be outgoing mayor of the city of New Britain, Aaron Stewart. Now, who knows? You know, there could be more people jumping into the race, probably figuring out now if they can get the small donations to get money from the Citizens Election Fund. Because if you get the requisite number of small donations, the state hands you about $15 million. Not too shabby. May not be enough to beat Ned Lamont, but, you know, I digress. So let's say we're a year out. And you've been listening to me for another year. You've been listening to Lisa in the midday. You've been listening to Melissa in the morning. You've been listening to our weekend programs. And you have decided, I'm voting for Ned Lamont, or I'm voting for Aaron Stewart, or I'm voting for Ryan Fazio, or I'm going to write somebody in, or whatever. You've made that decision to a great extent. You may be of the crew that says, well, I guess I'm going to vote this way, but change my mind. All right. So now that we've forwarded, we've fast forwarded. Remember that with tape? Fast forward your cassette. We fast forwarded a year. And you're about to, go in the local voting place, polling place in your city or town, or maybe you're sitting home and filling out an absentee ballot, a ballot for yourself or a loved one, or if You're in Bridgeport. You've got 30 ballots there for 10 people. I'm kidding. It's a joke. Well, not really. Here's the question I have for you. Here's what I'd like you to contemplate and share with us today, kind of to get us going, because I'm seeing a lot more stories about this in the paper. I still say the paper. You know what I mean? I can't remember the last time I actually bought a physical newspaper, but I digress. I was probably on vacation somewhere. You know when they slipped the USA Today under your door? But anyway, so a year from now, here's the question I have for you. You will have decided who or whom you are voting for because of this issue. What issue is that? And the reason I ask this is because I'm seeing a couple of interesting stories today. One of the Hartford Current about all the bets are it's going to come down likely between Ryan Fazio and Aaron Stewart to be the Republican nominee. And the governor, I believe it was last night or the night before, he was in at a forum by the group Indivisible, which is the group that sponsors a lot of the No Kings rallies around the state, which must be working, because last time I checked, we don't have a king. And the governor was peppered by questions regarding things like immigrant rights. They don't bother to use the adjective illegal, but that's another story. Immigrants' rights, cost, and everything. But think about it. And I don't care whether you're just getting by, whether you're on public assistance, whether you're independently wealthy, or somewhere floating in the middle. 1 year from now, you will have decided to vote for Governor Lamont, or Ryan Fazio, or Aaron Stewart, or Josh Elliott, or somebody else that may jump in the race. There's still plenty of time. What is your number one issue? If you had to tell a pollster, or your favorite talk show host, thank you, or anybody else, what is your number one issue? I'm voting for Ned Lamont because. I'm voting for Josh Elliott because. I'm voting for Aaron Stewart because. I'm voting for Ryan Fazio because. Or I'm writing in Paul Pacelli because, God, he makes my day every Monday through Friday from 2 to 6. Ha, 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 ha. Governor met and sat down with some progressive folks from Stanford and Norwalk. No surprise there. But I read that story and I said they all kind of have, as everybody does. You've got your reasons why you vote for somebody. To me, that is far more fascinating than who'd you vote for. The who is easy. Candidate A, B, or C. What's the why? You tell me why. And even if it's not for next year, tell me why. Why you cry. And why you lie to me. Oh, sorry, I go into song every so often. So let's open the big program today, and question of the day here. Facebook.com/voiceofct. What will be your? That's right, your number one concern when you head to the polls for the 2026 Connecticut elections. All right, let's look ahead, because let's face it. We all have issues that are deal breakers, make or break. What's yours? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. All righty. Not who, but why. Or maybe what. What am I talking about? Why do you vote for somebody? And let's fast forward here. We're starting a little game, right? As we head into the weekend here, Columbus Day weekend, I'll be in the parade on Sunday. That'll be a hoot. I'm in for Melissa Monday morning on Columbus Day. But as we head into the Columbus Day weekend, no, it's Columbus Day, kids. It's not Indigenous this or this heritage, no. For this kid, as my relatives still say, a Cristoforo Colombo. But I digress. So let's make like it's a year from now, and it's mid to late October of 2026. And forget the federal elections, forget the elections for Congress. There might be a little bit of interest in that here in Connecticut, maybe the first district. There's rumors of maybe somebody challenging Jim Himes in the fourth. But let's look at the governor's race. And it's likely going to be Ned Lamont. All indications are he'll run again. Maybe Josh Elliott challenges him. I don't know. On the Republican side, Jen Tooker's out of the race, the first select woman of Westport. Ryan Fazio's in the race. Aaron Stewart, who knows? But as you walk into the polling place to show your ID and to get that card and then to go stand up or sit down and play arts and crafts and fill in all 17 of those holes, like you'll do in a few weeks for your Board of Ed and your Board of Selectmen and your town council. And, oh, my God, oh, pick any three. Any three? I don't know one of these people, but I'm kidding. But next year, when you're doing all this, you tell me what your topic one is. Or as the great John McLaughlin used to say, issue one. What's going to decide your vote next year? The reason I ask this is Governor Ned Lamont sat down with a bunch of people. Sounds like he handled him pretty well from, shall we say, the far left of his party, primarily in Fairfield County. The people who say, well, you know, we're losing our democracy. Then you ask them, well, what exactly can't you do today that you did yesterday? They can't answer it. Let's kick it off with Bob in Weston. Bob, what's up with you, sir? How are you?
Paul.
Yes.
How are you?
Am I
allowed to say the old phrase we did in the old days?
What's that?
I hope we have an Indian summer.
Yeah, no, I want
do, it. Do it, I have to say Native American?
Yeah.
Okay.
Indigenous. Anyway, how about an indigenous summer? Can we do that?
There we go. Paul, I'm going to ask you a big favor.
Yeah.
After I answer the question,
yeah.
I just have one more thing I'd like to add.
Okay.
First of all,
yeah.
Look at New York.
Yeah.
Look at the governor.
Uh-huh.
Look at New Jersey.
Yeah.
Look here, look there.
Yeah.
The word, I'm an independent,
okay.
Republican leaning.
All right.
But Governor Ned Lamont.
Yeah.
What a beautiful guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't see any other choice. Intelligent, honest, you know, a forward thinker. And look what he's done for Connecticut. I mean, he has to handle that whole Senate. The guy is golden.
One thing he does, and I've said this numerous times, is he keeps the crazies in his own party bottled up. They
yes.
hate him for that. But
yes.
but look, he is socially liberal. It's Connecticut. You're never going to be conservative on abortion in this state or guns or education. But he certainly is governor, no new taxes, and it drives
yep.
his party nuts.
Yep. He's the guy.
Yeah.
Paul,
yeah.
This is a bit of a favor.
Okay.
I just want to put it out there.
Yeah.
One of my tenants in Yonkers, New York yesterday,
yeah.
she was called me frantically. She had called the police for an hour.
Okay.
They said, oh, they're not really disturbing anything. 14 drug dealers outside her little shop.
Okay. Hall,
and I had to say, look, I'm going to call 911.
Yeah.
Anyway, the police came.
All right.
All these drug dealers, they were like, they got the cameras out. Oh, we're going to have your badges.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The phones. Yeah. The phones. Yeah. What's
they
your badge number?
The crowd.
Yeah.
Now, here's my favor / request.
Mm-hmm.
If you could put it out there,
yeah.
I'm trying to get to the DOJ, Department of Justice,
yeah.
or
yeah.
the DEA,
yeah.
Drug Enforcement Agency,
yeah.
but I can't get through to anybody. If any of your listeners could call in to you at some point
okay.
off the phone, whatever,
yeah.
I'd be so grateful because this has been going on 11 years. Yonkers is not doing a damn thing, and this is a Democratic regime. It goes right up to the Senate, and I got to do something, Paul, before I lose everything.
Yeah.
Three tenants I lost this last week
wow.
because of the junkies and the drug dealers. And
you call the police, and does Yonkers have a city council? I mean, does anybody?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
My city council representative.
Yeah.
When she was running for office, I gave her money to run.
Yeah.
When she, you know, she said, "Oh, I know the drug dealers, I can get rid of them." And I said, "Great." And then she needed a place to stay.
Yeah.
So I gave her a place for $800 a month, yeah. of which 6 months after she puts her boyfriend and some other guy
all right.
in there.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Didn't even pay. Didn't even pay the rent.
All right.
That aside, I'm just looking to get these drug dealers out of there. And if any of your people out there, Paul, have a line to someone there,
that'd
be forever grateful.
All right.
Anyway, all the best.
Thank
Paul.
You, Bob. Appreciate it. Good call. Thank you, Bob. Yeah, it's got to be. Listen. It's got to be rough when, you know, you're trying to lease out apartments or lease out condos and be honest here. And you have people, or as I like to say, ne'er-do-wells, allegedly doing what they do. So you tell me, by the way, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. What is your number one issue? What will be, as the great John McLaughlin used to say, issue one? I'm voting for X, Y, and Z because of this and only because of this. What will that be coming up next year in Connecticut for you? As we head into Columbus Day weekend 2025, we couldn't get Christopher Columbus today, so we got the next best thing, Christopher Caruso. Cristoforo, how are you, my man? What's up?
Very good, Paul. And talking about government shutdown,
yeah.
Tonight and tomorrow night would have been the Marine Band concerts that we do every year.
Yep.
It would have been our 36th year, and many people love to come to those concerts, enjoy them. We get great crowds. But because of the government shutdown, the Marines weren't allowed to travel to Bridgeport. The funding wasn't there, so in turn, it didn't happen. So for those who haven't heard that word yet, there's no concert tonight or tomorrow night. It's been canceled.
Now, what I understand, though, we're trying to reschedule, right?
That's right. We're working on that now, Paul, and trying to get a date that will work for the band and also Bridgeport, and we're working on that now. There's no date definite, but we are working on a few dates, and then we'll announce it to the public. The Marines really love Bridgeport. I know the people of Bridgeport and the surrounding community love the Marines, and we just want to bring everyone together again. It won't be Columbus Day, but it will still be a nice time to bring everyone together.
All right. And the parade, Chris, and I'm honored to be the honorary Grand Marshal. Parade is still on, rain or shine, right?
Yes, it's still on. One of the things in our tradition is to make sure we do the parade, that we didn't want to break the line of years that the parade has happened. This year is the 117th year. And I think we're the second oldest parade in the country. The first one is out of San Francisco. And then I think we come in second because I've done some research and it looks that way. I could be wrong and I stand corrected, but based on what I was able to look at, it looks like San Francisco in the 1800s did their first parade. And we did ours in 1908.
Wow.
But we also had a reenactment, if you will, of the Columbus coming to, not America, but to the Caribbean, which he accidentally came across. we did a reenactment of that at Seaside Park, and I think it was 1892. So we are one of the oldest in the country, and we keep that tradition alive.
Absolutely. Chris, couple things in the news, and you know, I know you're big on accountability and on and staying away from corruption and all this, and I think Hearst did an outstanding job in a multi-part series that they did that generated a ton of calls here and a ton of reaction on social media. That, you know, you wonder, and again, this is a tricky subject because it's hard to prove this, Chris, but, you know, you wonder whether, unfortunately, is City Hall in Bridgeport one of the locales around the state that a lot of people, including the justices of the peace, are very astute people. They're wondering, are there marriage scams going on here, and how do we get a hold of this?
Well, they do occur, marriage scams. I remember when I was in the legislature, a gentleman in Danbury married a group of people and never filed the paperwork and come to find out he wasn't a JP. And the legislature had to make valid those marriages. You know, the legislature can do that. And we took a vote to validate all those marriages that this person had done, but he wasn't legitimate. And I, as a matter of fact, full disclosure, I'm a justice of the peace too, Paul.
Well, there you go, Chris. Chris, if I ever take the dive again, I'm coming to you. We'll negotiate a little envelope there. It'll be all good. So just let you know. And I am a citizen of the U.S., and I'll make sure I marry a citizen. But go ahead.
I'll do it free. Pesendonim.
All right.
Free,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
But no, Paul, I've been for over 20 years a justice of the peace. And I had warned City Hall, the leadership of City Hall, that there was a problem occurring at 999 Broad Street, which is City Hall, because I had heard rumors. And also that apparently there were people marrying people right in City Hall. And I warned the City Hall about it, that there was a problem. And sure enough, apparently the newspaper is doing a review and investigation.
Yeah.
And I think what was fascinating is that people are being bussed in from other parts of the country.
I know.
not just Connecticut, from other parts of the country.
Yeah.
And the men were dressed apparently in suits.
Yeah.
And the women that were marrying them were very casually dressed.
Yeah.
And then they lined, well, it's so funny that this could even happen. They lined the people up outside City Hall, the men on one side, the women on the other, and they would be lined up, and they go into the vital records office, get the wedding license issued, and then they would marry them right at City Hall. And this would be, now, I've also heard some rumor, and I don't have fact of it, but
yeah,
that some of these JPs are making over $40,000 a month.
$40,000 a month.
A month, Paul. And the reason is because with Justice of the Peace, you could charge whatever you want for a wedding.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I will tell you, full disclosure, I've charged $75.
Oh.
Okay? And I've stayed that way for about 20 years. I haven't gone up. And as a matter of fact, if it's a young couple, and it's they're trying to start their life off.
Sure.
Many times I would throw it in for free. I
nice.
Wouldn't even charge them. Okay.
Yeah.
Now what was happening, Paul? Over the last 3 years, I got no calls, no inquiries saying, "Hey, Mr. Caruso, you're a JP. Can you marry us?" I never got a call. Right. So those 3 years, the reason I'm not getting calls, and not only me but other JPs, is because of what's happening at City Hall.
Well, you're not mixed up in the clique, shall we say.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And you know, the interesting thing, Paul, they're marrying people right at City Hall.
Yeah.
They're not giving money as a rent to City Hall. They're using that building for free. And so when I talked to the leadership at City Hall, I said, "Well, gee, can a lawyer come in and hang a shingle? Could a doctor, could a CPA, could an accountant come in and run things?" You know, these are businesses, Paul. It's income. It has to be reported to the IRS over a certain dollar amount, right? It's a business. So here these JPs are marrying people as a business, doing it for free at City Hall, not having to pay anything. And then they're marrying these people. There's no law against an immigrant marrying a citizen.
Yeah.
But in this case, The problem is that, you know, they're not getting married because they're in love or they really, you know, want a life together. They're marrying people just to bypass immigration law.
Yeah, it's maddening.
That's why the feds are looking at it, from what I hear, and they're looking into it. And then they're coming on buses, Paul.
Buses.
Many of these people are coming on buses.
You know. And Chris, in about the minute we have left here, because I got to scoot, but come to find out, as always, there were a couple of bills introduced in the General Assembly last year and pushed very hard by the Secretary of the State's office, Stephanie Thomas.
Yep.
Even she said there's probably some funny stuff going on here. And just like Chris, it's just like with the absentee ballots. The bills sound real good and they go nowhere. Yep. They go nowhere.
That's right. That's right, Paul. And the only interesting thing in Bridgeport, the people that are marrying people in Bridgeport, I hear they're doing it in New Haven, too.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why they're making, and you know, Paul, they charge $400, $500, $600 a person to get married.
Nice. What the hell am I doing? So, what am I doing here?
Well, that's right. So you add that up, it honestly could be $40,000 a month
either
way.
Wow.
And they're making money hand over fist, and these people are coming in. All the men apparently are dressed in suits, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
Maybe they got a letter or something. You have to be in a suit. to make it look legitimate. But it's unbelievable, Paul. That
unreal.
It's allowed to go on.
Unreal. Yeah. Unreal. Yeah. Chris, thank you, and I'll see you on Sunday for the parade, okay?
Yes, see you then, Paul.
All right, then. Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye. All right, let's get away from all the negativity here with the politics and the news. Let's talk about something very, very serious here. Welcoming our next guest, who is a neuroscientist. He researches the brain, technology, and security at University College London, Georgetown University, and the Center for Strategic and International Studies in D.C. He advises the Pentagon, the joint staff there. He's worked with governments in the private sector. He's been cited and featured on outlets like CNN, the BBC, Foreign Affairs, Foreign Policy, The Atlantic, and Slate. The name of the book is Warhead, How the Brain Shapes War and War Shapes the Brain. Dr. Nicholas Wright joins us. Dr. Wright, it's Paul here on WICC. Thank you for stopping by. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Paul. Thanks so much for having me on.
Fascinating. I saw this pitch. I said I had to have you on. This sort of thing fascinates me. How the brain shapes war. How does that happen, Doctor? What role do we as humans and our brain functions have in shaping war?
Well, I mean, war on the brain have always been together, or conflict in the brain. Throughout history and prehistory, many humans faced violence or starvation or other life and death emergencies. And to navigate those types of life-threatening emergencies, every brain is built to win or at least survive a fight. So that's the same. That's your brain and my brain and every listener's brain. And actually, we see that every part of the brain, all the way from the brainstem right down at the base, which does some of our most basic things like breathing and controlling our blood pressure and so on, all the way through to the other end of the brain that does our most sophisticated things like thinking about our own thinking.
And then the second part of this, Doctor, how war shapes the brain. Now, is that an evolutionary thing, or are we speaking of things like the effects that war has on the brain, things like PTSD and stress and all that?
It's both. That's a great question. It's both. I mean, I think if we look at the first part of that, it is impossible to understand how the brain works unless you realize that the potential for life-threatening emergencies has shaped every part of our brain. Take, for example, fear. And this links to your second question about PTSD. So fear. It sounds counterintuitive, but we need fear. Fear is useful, right? There is a small part of the brain, you have one on each side, called the amygdala. Okay. And the amygdala is really important for fear. So I've seen patients with a very rare condition where they lose that part of the brain. They lose their amygdalas. And that means they don't feel fear. They don't recognize fear properly in others, and they don't feel fear themselves. But fear is useful. So for these people, when they lose fear, they don't become some kind of fearless criminal who can take whatever they want, you know, unafraid of any consequences. That's not what happens. They actually become victims of crime because fear is useful. Fear helps us navigate the world. And so we need fear. But then on the other hand, fear can also cause problems that can help drive us towards war. So, you know, if I fear what the other side is doing and they feel what I'm doing, then that can lead to spirals that can lead to conflict. And of course, if fear runs amok, that can lead to problems like PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a disorder of fear.
Dr. Nicholas Wright, neurologist. The name of the book is Warhead, How the Brain Shapes War and War Shapes the Brain. Dr. Wright, all societies, no matter what country, no matter how far back in the future, back in the past and likely in the future, we tend to deify great military leaders. Are their brains different? Are they wired differently to send men and women into battle and to think strategically and dispassionately about it?
That is a really great question. In a way, yes. So leaders are wired a little bit differently. And I'll put aside, you know, military geniuses, because I think that term can be applied to people like Napoleon or Nelson. But yes, so what we know, for example, is a lot of people don't actually like being leaders. They don't like taking on responsibility for others. And so a good leader is somebody who is willing to take on responsibility for others.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the only thing that makes them a good leader. Another good leader is good at having a well-judged sense, of their own self-confidence.
Mm.
You need to have self-confidence to take on responsibility for others, but you also need to take on other people's opinions and have a good judgment about your own confidence. A great example of that is Dwight D. Eisenhower, a man who had to make, you know, unbelievably stressful choices about, you know, should I let D-Day go ahead?
Yeah.
You know, when there might be bad weather that could have destroyed the whole thing. You know, and he took that responsibility on. He took lots of different people's opinions together, and he combined it. But he was the one who made the decision.
You also mention, I think, from what I'm seeing here, fascinating thought here. World War II leaders, as you mentioned, tank commanders, the great Shaka Zulu, or Sir Winston Churchill. And you say these people, and this is fascinating, could see through the fog of war. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, that what they were able to do is they were able to see further than many other people. And the reason for that is that they weren't just clever, although they all were, but they were also wise. So wisdom is something that, you know, perhaps people don't talk enough about these days, but that's what those great leaders have. Wisdom is the ability to see the bigger picture about ourselves in the world, so that we can choose actions that help us achieve our goals, right? That's what wisdom is. And we're learning so much more about how wisdom works in the brain. So to give you an example, a really central part of wisdom, and this is the case if you look at ancient China or ancient, ancient Greece, thinking know thyself, right? A central component of wisdom is always the ability to reflect, to think about your own thinking, to self-reflect. And what we've seen over the last 15 years or so is an explosion in our understanding about how humans can think about their own thinking. And what's even more remarkable, how we can enhance, we can improve how we think about our own thinking. So that can help us become wiser and help us see through the fog of war. We'll never get rid of the fog of war completely. There will always be things that we cannot know, but we can see further and better if we are wiser.
In about the minute we have left, Dr. Wright, the fact that we all, a lot of us my age and a little younger and older, have had relatives who have been in some really bad war situations, but you hear, hey, Grandpa never talked about it, or Uncle Mike never wanted to talk about it. Where does that come from? Is that the brain medicating itself? Is that the human brain kind of putting those horrible memories in a corner of war and not wanting to tap into them?
I mean, there's a part of that. I think one of the things we must remember about the human brain is how resilient it is. So our brains, if you think about all the people who went through World War II, you know, my great uncle, you said that my great uncle Sidney, he was a British tank commander in World War II. He fought for years, right up until the very end of World War II, and he won a high award for bravery in World War II as a tank commander. And yet, I remember him as a happy man.
Yeah,
he used to push me around when I was a kid in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
You know, he was surrounded by children in his 100th birthday, you know, and loving family members. Humans are enormously resilient.
Sure.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm really optimistic about the future.
Excellent. Name of the book, Warhead, How the Brain Shapes War and How War Shapes the Brain, Dr. Nicholas Wright. Dr. Wright, thank you so much. We appreciate the time, sir, and good luck down the road. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye.